Chapter 10. Hanging in orbit, cooling their heels outside Todo Santos's defensive minefield, may have made everybody else aboard the Princess Cecile jittery and snappish, but Adele found it the ideal place to gather information, which was her job after all. "When my job isn't shooting people," she added mentally, and because she was in a good mood, that whimsy made her tight smile broaden by a hair's breadth. If she'd known how to whistle, she'd have whistled as Daniel did in similar circumstances. It probably wasn't worth the effort to learn the art now, though. She caught movement from the corner of her eye and glanced to the side. Daniel glided over to her console, his face unwontedly grim. The Princess Cecile had gravity, or its equivalent, only on a planet or under power. Todo Santos Control had assigned them an orbit which they could leave only at the risk of being treated as hostile by the planetary defenses. "Can you get a notion of how long we'll wait for landing approval, Mundy?" Daniel asked, as usual professionally formal in public settings. The fact he'd come over to talk without going through the commo system showed how much inaction frustrated him. She forwarded to Daniel's console the layout of the harbor at San Juan, the planetary and effectively national capital. Technically, the 10-star cluster was part of the Commonwealth and tributary to Radiance. The ship's ordinary sensors would have provided images showing the size and number of ships in the Great Harbor. But Adele's, the additional software and equipment from Mistress Sand, edited the vessel's names, their arrival and planned departure dates, and all the other information in the files of planetary control. In a few minutes, she'd have completed gathering all the data of the vessel's computers. Oh yes, this was a fine environment for a skilled information specialist. "There seemed to be only two picket boats," Adele explained. She shrank the communications data she'd been working with to a sidebar so that she could project a spatial display for Daniel. Instead of echoing the image to his helmet visor, her first thought, she switched her console to project an omnidirectional view. She frowned. "According to Control Authority records, there are five, but I can't find any physical sign of the others." Daniel chuckled, returning to his normal good humor. "I'm confident that the pay and maintenance charges do exist in somebody's pocket. Well, this isn't Cinnabar, you know, and even on Cinnabar..." "Ah," said Adele, nodding. She reminded herself again that records might be wrong when there were human beings in the equation. She should just factor that in as she would the chance of equipment failure. Instead of feeling a surge of anger every time she learned that somebody had deliberately corrupted her data... Yes, of course. In any case, one of the picket vessels cleared a Kostroman freighter 47 minutes ago and is on its way to the Princess Cecile. The other picket vessel is... that's odd," she said, switching back to the commo screen without thinking of her guest. "This might be important. Daniel, the other picket is clearing an Alliance freighter out of the Pleasurance named Goldenfels, ID number 83191-7. "Well, that's proper," Daniel said, locking his right leg around the post of her seat as he squinted at the display. It would mean as little to him as his astrogation tank did to her. "The Alliance was never formally at war with the Commonwealth, you know. There just isn't much Alliance traffic because of distance and the risk of piracy." "Daniel," Adele said, pursing her lips in exasperation, "that's all I can tell about the Goldenfels. I can't get into their navigation system through their communications suite. The ship's shielded too well." "Ah," said Daniel, his face placid and wearing a quizzical smile. "Can they get into our system?" "Of course they can," she said tartly. "If they couldn't, it'd be a dead giveaway that we're a spy ship, wouldn't it? To anybody who had the equipment and the necessary skill." She gave her friend what she supposed was a smile of rather prissy satisfaction. "They can't get into my system, however," she added. "And according to the manifest they can read, we have a much smaller crew, mostly from Novi Sverdlovsk, and no missiles." "The Klimovs are approaching the bridge," Tavera's voice whispered through the left car of Adele's helmet. "Captain, how long must we stay like this?" said the Count as he slid through the hatch inexpertly. Though at that he was rather better at it than Adele was, she noted with a degree of irritation. The Klimovna followed her husband, bouncing from the deck to the ceiling of the passage. They'd gone to their stateroom on sea deck after the Princess Cecile fell into orbit around Todo Santos, hoping to find it more comfortable than the bridge annex. Apparently, they'd been disappointed in that hope. "Guardship Abdul Hassan docking with Cinnabar vessel Princess Cecile," an edgy voice said over the ground control channel. "Prepare to receive port control officials." "Princess Cecile to Abdul Hassan," Daniel replied. His voice was blurred to Adele in what was now a familiar fashion. coming by radio through her helmet as well as directly from his lips to her ears. "We'll receive you at our forward dorsal hatch. Princess Cecile, over." Rather than out, Adele noticed, indicating that he expected to resume transmission. The locals hadn't bothered to code their signal, either out of sloppiness or deliberate discourtesy. Daniel turned to the climb-offs, straightening and wedging the toe of his left boot between Adele's console and the bulkhead to anchor him. "Port control will board in a few minutes, sir. I trust that when a few formalities are taken care of, we'll be cleared to land." He coughed. "Ah, one of the formalities is likely to be a tip to the officials," he added. "Otherwise, we might remain in orbit for an extended period." "Yes, of course," said Klimov. "How much?" The Count shrugged, but he shouldn't have. The motion sent him drifting toward the ceiling again, his arms windmilled. "The Kostroman freighter that just got clearance paid 150 Kostroman ducats," Adele said. "If those are new ducats, as I assume they were, that's about 110 cinnabar florins, or..." Her left wand twitched, providing data as she was irritated not to have prepared earlier. 3,218 Sverdlov crowns." The Klimovs looked startled that she'd been the one to answer. Daniel only smiled, though now that Adele thought about it, she guessed she wouldn't have realized she'd amassed quite so much information so quickly. The spacer who'd steadied Klimovna now gripped the Count, keeping himself anchored by a toe against the hatch combing. Klimov lifted his tunic to expose a money belt, then began counting alliance marks into the palm of his hand. "Captain, there's a ship approaching," said Sun, speaking loudly enough to be heard while keeping his whole attention on his gunnery display. "Ship, port control is about to board us," Daniel said on his general push. The Klimovs listened intently. They weren't wearing the Kamo helmets they'd been issued, so he made a point of speaking directly to them. "We should be splashing down in half an hour, thanks to the owner's reasonable attitude regarding port charges." "Good-o for the Klimov," somebody shouted over the PA system. It was probably Dorst, since only on the bridge and the battle center could access the speakers at the moment. There was a general ragged cheer. "And son," Daniel said, leaning closer to the gunner, "if your turrets aren't locked fore and aft, I'll derate you right now." Son turned and grinned at him. "They're locked, sir," he said, "but they aren't stowed. I figure we're in the north now, so we can take a little knocking around on descent, just so we don't look like patsies to the wogs, right?" Adele winced. When the Klimovs were safely off the bridge, she reminded Sun that "wog" wasn't a word you used when the owners traveling with you were from Novi Sverdlovsk. "There's a customs boat docking with us, Captain," Wojcins warned over the hard-wired connection. As soon as the corvette dropped into orbit, the triggers had furled the sails, rotated the spars vertical, and locked them to the antennas which they telescoped and folded for landing. The bosun sent the port watch below, but she and the starboard watch remained outside. "Acknowledge, Wojcins," Danny replied. "Bring them through dorsal forward and follow them aboard." He smiled to the Klimovs, floating at angles to the deck. A rigger from the port watch held his arm out. The Klimovna gripped his wrist and held herself steady. "Our bosun announced the arrival of the guard vessel," Daniel explained. "It'll be just a few minutes." When a vessel was in the matrix, the thrust of Casimir radiation against her charged sails slid her between bubble universes of varying space-time constants. Even so small as input as a radio signal or the electromagnetic field of a current-carrying wire could introduce literally incalculable variables. The problem didn't exist in sidereal space, but the riggers used radio frequency gear sparingly nonetheless. The hand signals and semaphores by which they set the sails in the matrix generally sufficed for other times as well. Adele could have watched the Abdul Hassan sending lines to the Sissi, but the fine points of ship handling wouldn't have been any of her affair, even if the locals were likely to teach her something that the corvette's crew didn't know. Instead, she entered the computer of the other port control vessel, the Piri Reis, and pirated the information the local inspectors were sending back from the Goldenfels. The boarding team unreeled a fiber-optic cable to their own vessel, making the data impossible to jam or intercept until it got to the Piri Reis. At that point, it became Adele's at literally the speed of light. Her wands flickered as she watched the images cascade through her display. The airlock just after the Sissi's bridge cycled, then purred open. A pair of helmeted strangers came out, followed by crewmen whose rigging suits made them look huge and clumsy compared to the others in flexible air suits. The crystalline flex joining the first local's helmet to his ship was hair fine. Even knowing it must be there, Adele could only see a quiver in the air. The rig was expensive and of the highest quality. The only justification for it she could imagine was that it kept the inspectors honest. in the sense that their superiors knew exactly how much the bribe had been, so that those superiors could extract their proper portion. "As I'm the owner, Count Gorgi Klimov," the Count said, stepping forward with the help of the spacer behind him, "I believe it's my place to greet you. I trust you'll find our papers in order, and also that you'll honor me by accepting this little token." He flashed a little sheaf of circuit-imprinted bills, each with the picture of Guarantor Pura, toward the inspector unreeling the optical fiber, then handed them to the other man. Adele used his helmet camera's image to see the denominations which the Count's hand hid from her. 85 marks, which, according to the rate current in Xenos when the Princess Cecile lifted, would be worth 112 cinnabar florins. She frowned at this further evidence that the Count was worthy of more respect than she'd been willing to grant him. The inspectors huddled for a moment, taking much longer to count the money than Adele had. At last they looked up, and the one with the camera shrugged. "Your papers are fine," he said. "You've got berth D-73. The money vanished into his tool pouch. His partner added, "There'll be wharf charges, too. We're just clearing you to land." "D-73 is the outer arc," Daniel said, drawing the eyes of everyone present toward him. "I notice slip A-12 is open alongside the Aristozenos, where some of us might have old shipmates. I wonder if there might be a way we could land there? The causeway to the inner arc would save the Count and Countess from having to take a boat to shore. The air car came to a bad end on the world we just visited." "The A-slips are for fleet only," said the inspector, who'd taken the bribe. His fingers touched his tool pouch. "Or special cases. Anyway, the Piri Rice already cleared a freighter for A-12, said the man with the camera. "It means squaring the Piri's crew, too." "How much?" said Klimova bluntly. The inspectors looked at her, then toward one another. The man with the camera shrugged. The other nodded in decision and said to the Klimovs, "For the A-slips, 250 marks. We couldn't do it for less." "Done," said the Count. He opened his money belt again. Daniel pushed off from the bulkhead, sliding backward to the command console as smoothly as a seal swimming. His fingers began to dance forcefully over his touchplate, adjusting the display. As the Count paid the additional sum into one inspector's gloved hand, bill by bill, his partner closed his helmet so he could use its microphone to speak to the crew of the other guard ship. He spoke with animation, finally grasping his partner's hand with the money and holding it directly in front of his helmet camera. Nodding forcefully, he opened his visor again. "I made a mistake," he said. "Slip A-12 is open after all. We have assigned it to your fine vessel, Count Klimov. A pleasure doing business with you." He turned and opened the airlock's inner door, the air behind him shimmering as his communications cable wound back on his take-up spool. His partner, patting the bribe away in his pouch, followed. As the airlock closed, everyone on the Princess Cecile's bridge, except Adele, grinned with satisfaction and began to chatter. Adele was listening to the scene on the Golden Fills Bridge while the other team of inspectors explained to Captain Bertram that his ship wasn't cleared for slip A-12 after all. She frowned with concern. If Bertram had been present, her hand would have been touching the pistol in her tunic pocket. "Ship, this is the captain," Daniel said, lying back on the couch of his console with the surface of the Todos Santos 3,000 miles below. "I'll be initialing landing sequence in 2 minutes." 40 seconds. Prepare for landing. Out." The Sissy's computer would land the vessel. A sidebar listed the already programmed thruster impulse by seconds per nozzle. If Daniel chose, he could add the actual course track, a skein of red lines which could circle the planetary image until it terminated in slip A-12, though the harbor itself wasn't visible at the present scale. He didn't bother, but when they entered the atmosphere, he'd switch to direct visuals. Adele inset a red outline communications block in the upper left corner of Daniel's display. The text read, "Laser signal from Goldenfels. Vessel, Princess Cecile," an unfamiliar voice said. According to the icons, Adele was routing the signal only to Daniel and the battle center. "The Goldenfels has been allotted slip A-12. Don't interfere or you'll regret it." The ship was lifting from the harbor, circled in yellow by the display. Daniel had caught the puff of steam as the Princess Cecile passed over San Juan. It was one of the country craft, ships of 500 or 600 tons. They towed bulk cargoes which they picked up in orbit, carrying only high-value items within their hulls. Without external loads, they were ideal for smuggling and for piracy. Daniel began to key in new course data. His face wore a smile. His fingertips hammered the virtual touchpad, but that was from the enthusiasm with which he always typed, not out of anger. He wasn't angry. Ship battle stations, he said over the general push, the sidebar, which showed braking impulse, blurred, then sharpened to reflect the course changes. There's an Alliance freighter which believes it can push us out of our landing site. The RCN is going to show them they're wrong this time, too. Initiating landing sequence, now! Over the roar of the thrusters on 80% flow, he added, Six, out! Daniel was vaguely aware that he dropped back into naval parlance. In his mind, he was no longer the captain, but rather Ship Six. Very probably the crew had always thought of him that way. As for the Klimovs, well, they hadn't seemed like the sort who'd take to being pushed around either. If Daniel guessed wrong, he supposed it proved he hadn't been cut out to command a civilian vessel. Toto Santos Control, this is Sanibar Registry Vessel Princess Cecile, Daniel said, cueing both the ground control satellites and the Goldenfels. He noticed from the icons that Adele was sending the transmission by tight beam microwave, not only to the Alliance freighter, but also to both orbiting guard ships. We are proceeding as directed by Toto Santos Control to Slip A-12, San Juan Harbor. Please acknowledge, over. His words slurred slightly from braking impulse and the thruster's vibration. Things were rattling adrift, even on the bridge. God knew what was happening in the main compartments. The crew had expected to circle down at 1G. Instead, they were dropping twice as fast. Daniel hoped the climbers were strapped into their couches, but he didn't have time just now to check. An icon on the top of his display indicated they'd both have been talking to him if Adele hadn't blocked the signals. That meant at least they hadn't broken their necks. "Control to Princess Cecile," said a testy female voice. "You're cleared to land. If you children have a problem up there, make sure you solve it before you reach the ground, or I swear we'll jug all of you. Control out." That was what Daniel expected, and really the best he could hope for. The sissy didn't need the locals to sort out an Alliance ship for her, but if Toto Santos had gotten involved, it would have complicated a situation that was already complicated by the fact Cinnabar and the Alliance were at peace. "Six, this is 6-2," Chief Missileer Betts reported. "Target acquired. Course is set for first four missiles. Over." Daniel switched to the plot position indicator at his main display. The attack board, commo gunnery, and real-time visuals appeared at reduced scale along the bottom. Sun had the pipper for the dorsal's turret's twin 4-inch plasma cannon centered on the Golden Fells, though at the present range the weapons would harm only the sails furled to the freighter's spars. The ventral turret, offset toward the stern of D-deck, was still aligned fore and aft, but Sun had unlocked it. "Cinnabar vessel, I'm warning you," the voice from the Alliance freighter snarled. "We're landing on Slip A-12. If you're underneath when we come down, that's just too damn bad for you. Golden Fells out." The fellow was still using a laser communicator, so the atmospheric buffeting and the haze of ions from his plasma thrusters interfered with reception aboard the Princess Cecile. Adele's software smoothed off the burrs of static, but if the Alliance officer hadn't been so angry, he wouldn't have changed his mode of communication. The Princess Cecile was a warship with frames and bulkheads stressed to endure harder braking than any freighter could match. The Goldenfels had started its descent a few seconds earlier than the corvette, but there was no possibility that the Alliance vessel would reach the surface first. On the other hand, the freighter weighed some 8,000 tons empty. If her captain was serious about bringing her down on top of the sissy, and he certainly sounded serious, then something needed to be done quickly. "Mr. Sun, lock the dorsal turret onto the Goldenfels port quarter," Daniel ordered, expanding the gunnery screen to 40% of his display. He was using the ship's common channel instead of the command push so that everybody aboard knew what was happening. "On the order, I want you to walk your berth stern to bow along the line of her port thruster nozzles. Wait for the order. Over." On the display, the Alliance freighter was a slender dark mass above the 20 bright flares of its plasma thrusters. The Princess Cecile was already 12,000 feet below into the east up orbit of the Goldenfels. Sun shifted his pulsing orange crosshairs back and outward from the center of her belly, saying, "Aye, aye, sir." "Adele," Daniel had said, "transmit the imagery from our gunnery board to the Goldenfels. Break. Goldenfels, this is Daniel Leary of Bantry. If your vessel comes within a half mile of mine when we get below 50,000 feet, I'm going to shoot away your offside thrusters. If you're very good, you'll be able to catch your pig of a ship before she turns turtle and augers in. Leary, out." Daniel shrank the gunnery screen back to the bottom of his display and breathed deeply. He was trying to get his muscles to relax so they wouldn't cramp if he had to move quickly, as very likely he would. "Ship, this is six," he said, as red and blue tracks on the PPI marked the courses of the two descending vessels. "For those of you who don't have gunnery training," by which he meant particularly the Klimovs, who had a right to be both furious and terrified at the way things were going, "let me explain that the Goldenfels cannot use any ventral guns that might bear on us. Danner didn't know with certainty that the Alliance freighter was armed, but it'd be a common-sense precaution for any ship trading in the galactic north. While her thrusters are in operation, plasma from her own exhaust would distort her bolts if it didn't do worse. If the Alliance captain shuts off power this deep into his descent, he'll almost certainly crash regardless of what we do, six out. Daniel licked his lips. A line of sweat had gathered at the brow of his helmet. He'd have liked to wipe it away before a drop fell into his eye, but he was afraid that'd send the wrong signal to those of the crew who were watching a feed of their captain's face. Beaded lines continued the astrogation computer's prediction of where the two ships would be in the next few minutes if one or the other didn't make a change. Both courses ended together in San Juan Harbor, though the scale was too small to identify slip A-12 precisely. The freighter's image swelled on the gunnery display, a distorted spindle half-hidden beneath an opalescent haze of charged particles. The gunnery display went almost white as the freighter's plasma thrusters increased power. For a moment, the image flared there, then it shrank, seeming to draw upward. In fact, it was the Sissy dropping away while the Goldenfels braked and shifted course minusculely. The Alliance captain was heading for slip D-73, Daniel supposed. At any rate, Daniel wouldn't want to be the officer who tried to lift a ship back to orbit after such a rapid descent. "Ship, this is Six," he said. He lifted his helmet and mopped his forehead with the sleeve of his tunic. "Prepare for touchdown, spacers, and welcome to Todos Santos."